Recording has started.
Thank you very much, everyone, and welcome to this CCWG on Enhancing Items Accountability meeting number 85 on February the 23rd at 6 UTC. And as usual, we will be doing the roll call based on those who are attending the Adobe Connect room, but we would also like to call for anyone that is not in the Adobe Connect room to please state your name at this point so we can add you to the roll call. Is there anyone in the phone bridge that is not in the Adobe Connect room at this point?
Yeah, this is Sean. I'll be on audio only. Thank you.
Thank you very much. That was Sean Ojedeji. So could we please add him to a roll call? Anyone else besides Sean? I note that Olga Cavalli is requiring a dial-out, so staff, can we please make sure that Olga gets a dial-out? Okay, so no one else on the phone bridge. So this, of course, a reminder, our usual reminder to update your statement of interest or file your statement of interest if you haven't done so. Please feel free to reach any staff member if you need any help or if you need to create your Wiki account so you can update your statement of interest. And as you know, we were scheduled to publish our final report, but we sent a note to the group explaining the reasons why we postponed this publication. And the purpose of the call today is to actually have a discussion on the way forward to the situation that we are going through and through the very fruitful discussion that has been happening in the mailing list. But to do this, I would like to call for all to please take a step back and see the larger picture, the big picture in this scene. We are really close to finalizing our report. And as someone has put it, we are 0.001% from reaching our goal. So let's take a step back. Let's just not take sides on who said what or at what time anyone said it. Let's just focus on the problem that we have in front of us, and let's all act in good faith and try to move forward and deliver our final proposal so we can successfully deliver what we are obliged to do. So with no further delay, I would like to turn to my co-chair, Thomas, and I would also like to remind everyone to please mute your microphones. If you are not speaking, we have an echo on audio at this point. So, Thomas, you have the floor.
Yes, thank you very much, Leon, and good morning, good afternoon, good evening to all of you. For some of you, it's a difficult time of the day or night. It's very early in my time zone, and I didn't have sufficient coffee to be fully operational, so please bear with me. Additionally, I'm in a hotel room where connection is very flaky, so I hope that I'm not being kicked out of the remote participation room. I might need to change locations if need be. Leon has made a very good introduction, and I would like to add to that by responding to some of the points that have been made on the mailing list in the last couple of days. Let's just remember that we do have a consensus proposal. We have a proposal that we were about to ship, and we have not shipped the proposal on the 19th because we, as co-chairs, felt that it was important for us to check with the group how the group wishes to proceed, because there are implications to it that I will speak to in a moment that are potentially quite far-reaching. So the way we've planned to have this discussion is that I will briefly update where we are in terms of process. We will then give Becky the opportunity to explain what we have in our report, because we spotted that there seems to be some confusion about what actually the substance of our report is, what the thresholds are, what the scenarios are, and we need to make sure that everyone is perfectly clear on what we are talking about. And then in the third step, we're going to discuss potential ways forward, and as I wrote in my latest note to the group, we are not predetermining the outcome of any of these discussions, but we should all be clear about the potential consequences and weigh our options. For this discussion, since the exchange of arguments has been very engaged and quite heated at times, let us, as Leon said, please step back. Let's look at the procedural aspects. Let's look at the substantive aspects of this discussion. Let's try not to rehearse arguments that have been made before. We would use the two-minute rule and the two interventions per speaker rule that we've used previously. So if you wish to support statements that have been made earlier, rather than repeating what's been said, just indicate that you're in support or in disagreement with that, so that we can save time and focus on an outcome. And talking about outcome, we would really like to end this call with guidance from this group as to what needs and should be done. Now, again, we have planned to send our report on the 19th, which we haven't done. There were several interventions from within and outside our group, and you will remember that it was always our goal to get the highest possible level of support
for our proposal, and we have looked at the report and assessed suggestions that have been made, and this was an iterative process that led us to a very high quality proposal that we have today. So if you look at the interventions that we got, the implications are far broader than just sent the report to the chartering organizations. Also, the interventions that we got might have broader implications than other minority statements would have. And we thought we need to hear the group and give the group the opportunity to weigh in before we proceed. So what are the issues at hand? Firstly, we have the intervention from the board. And the board, as you know, has passed a resolution whereby it can hold up passing on the report to NTIA if there is a two-thirds majority inside the board expressing global public interest concerns with our report. We can only speculate whether the board would reach a two-thirds majority based on global public considerations, but at least there is the risk that this will be the case, and there is the risk that if the board reaches this threshold, that handing over the proposal to NTIA on the handover date or the tentative date of March 10th will not be met, because as you will know, this resolution foresees that in such cases the board will enter into a negotiation a process with the CCWG. So a delay beyond Marrakesh is possible, and therefore the group needs to decide whether, or at least take into consideration that this is a potential consequence. Also, there might be implications based on the government's feedback. Several governments, as you know, have raised and voiced concerns with the latest changes that have been made to the proposal. And we want to be as inclusive as can be. So there might be broader political implications if the government's concerns are not adequately discussed and potentially being taken into account. So this is to explain to you why we didn't make an easy decision to not ship the report on the 19th, but we wanted to get feedback from the group on the ways forward. And before we discuss ways forward, let's try to get clarity on what we have in the report, because actually there are only two scenarios that are in question today with respect to the carve-out and the further clarifications to the carve-out. And those are cases where the community has not won an IRP against the board decision and where an IRP is not applicable. But as you know, there's no one better placed in our group to explain all the niceties of the carve-out and associated questions. So I would like to hand over to Becky to enlighten us further.
Thank you, Thomas. What I'm just going to go through is I think we're going to have a slide come up. It is just the language that is in the report right now. As you will recall, we agreed that to deal with situations where the GAC has issued consensus advice, which has a special status in the ICANN world and requires the board to work in good faith to find an acceptable solution to implementation of that advice, that in those cases where the community considering exercising one of the community powers to challenge the board's implementation of that GAC advice, that the GAC would be welcome to participate as in an ongoing advisory consultative role, but would not be permitted to act as a decision maker in those cases where the board's implementation the action to be challenged is implementation of GAC advice. Because we have had and articulated a non-unanimity principle, in that case, we noted that the power to that the thresholds would be lowered from 4 to 3 in those situations. And as you'll recall, we agreed that it was incumbent upon the board to articulate that it was acting on the basis of GAC advice, and that there would be obligations on the community to articulate that its challenge was to the board's implementation of GAC advice, et cetera. The board responded to that, saying that there should they believed that that they had concerns about lowering the thresholds from 4 to 3, and that they would agree to that lowering if an IRP was pursued prior to with respect to recall here. So we are talking about a situation where the GAC has implemented, where the board has implemented GAC advice. The community is challenging that implementation. The challenge involves use of the recall power. And the board basically said we would only support moving the threshold from 4 to 3 if the community has first sought an IRP and the community has won the IRP, which of course would mean that there was a finding that the board acted inconsistently with the ICANN bylaws or articles of incorporation. And in that case, only, they would support going to 3. In our discussions, we agreed that if an IRP was available, which means if the grounds for challenging the board's implementation of GAC advice was that in so doing, ICANN had violated its bylaws, then in that case, the community would first bring an IRP before it exercised the recall power. Now, we also understood and acknowledged that an IRP is not available in all cases. And by that, I mean if the community decided that it disagreed with the board's implementation of GAC advice on grounds other than that the implementation violated the bylaws. And in those cases, the discussion, which took place on the list and in the call on the 16th, we concluded at that time that that we, because the board recall power was important, that you couldn't essentially, that it would be a violation of the non-unanimity principle to make that to require unanimity where no IRP is available, meaning where the challenge does not is not to implementation because it violates the bylaws. Now, I just want to be sure that. So what we basically say in this language is where there's a challenge to the GAC, to the board's implementation of GAC advice that involves recall, the threshold for recalling the board would move from 4 to 3 if an IRP has found that in implementing GAC advice, the board violated the bylaws or articles of incorporation, or if there is no IRP available to challenge the board action in question. And so this basically says you first start with an IRP wherever that's available, but if it is not available because what the community is concerned about does not constitute a bylaws violation, then you still get the reduction. We went further and said we recognize that IRPs are binding, and that means that they are binding on the board and on the other party. And so if the community has brought an IRP and does not prevail, so the IRP says, no, sorry, we disagree, there was no bylaws violation, then recall is not available solely on the basis of the matter decided by the IRP, and that is you can't recall the board on the grounds that they violated the bylaws if an IRP says, no, in fact, the board didn't violate the bylaws. But again, to preserve the recall power and consistent with the non-unanimity principle, we did go on to say that the community may exercise that recall power on other grounds. Now, I want to, so the effect is here basically, and of course there are implementation details to be worked out, but the effect here is to say in the ordinary course, if an IRP, if there is a ground that says that the board's implementation of GAC advice is a bylaws violation, that is, the community should pursue that first. But if no IRP is available, then the community can still proceed with the lower threshold. We have all spent quite a lot of time trying to come up with a situation where an IRP would not be available to challenge a board action in question. And I think that we agree that it is possible but highly unlikely. So we are really talking about a corner case where the normal process would not be to bring an IRP first. I think that is consistent. The notion that you would bring an IRP first wherever possible is consistent with reality as well. Recall is appropriate for you know, when there is wide community where a vote of no confidence would otherwise be appropriate, for example, and that usually is not going to arise in response to a sort of a single incident of the board's implementation of GAC, a single implementation incidence of the board's implementation of GAC advice. The community is sufficiently diverse that one would expect and hope that a less disruptive alternative would be sensible, and also it is also most likely to be effective more than a straight recall is. So that's what we have here is we have said, we have agreed with the board that wherever possible an IRP should be pursued first, and if the grounds are for an IRP are there, but the community hasn't invoked that power, then the threshold remains at 4. But we have also preserved the ability of the community to invoke without requiring unanimity, to recall the board without requiring unanimity in those limited probably largely conceptual, but certainly not non-existent situations where an IRP, where the grounds simply do not support an IRP challenge.
Thank you very much, Becky. There have been a few questions in the chat. I'm not sure whether you've been able to follow those, but I guess one question was from, let me just go find it, Mike Chartier, I think he was, or Phil was asking for a scenario covering item number 2.
Well, I think we have really struggled with a scenario, and I think we discovered when we were putting this together that you know, that it's probably not a good idea to try to use examples from history to determine this. But what we are talking about is the GAC has given advice. The ICANN board has implemented it. The community wants to challenge that the board's implementation, and indeed, the community is either board recall is the only method it has, and board recall would be the only method it has to do that, because the community's objection to the implementation does not involve a claim that in implementing the board's advice, or the GAC's advice, the board acted in violation of its bylaws. I can't think of a place where it comes up. I mean, remember that there is no requirement that you have, that there's no set requirement for a particular reason. The community has to articulate its reason for wanting to recall the board. But under the arrangement we have in place, it can be that we just don't like what you did. It doesn't amount to a bylaw, but we just happen to think that it does not amount to a bylaws violation, but we are broadly, we meaning the community broadly, and here you would be talking about three of the four decisional participants in this matter, think that it is worth spilling the board for.
Thanks, Becky. Can you just explicitly respond to Mike Chartier's question, what is the threshold for the last two sentences, IRP fail? The language does not seem clear.
If the IRP fails, and then the community could could bring another ground that is not you violated the bylaws. It would be we just don't like this so much that we are going to recall you over it. And the threshold there, because in that situation, an IRP would not be available on those grounds and would not be available. Then the threshold would be three.
Thanks very much, Becky. Are there more questions for clarification on what the report currently says?
Yes, I have a question.
So,
me too.
Yes. Kavus, please.
Yes, good morning and good time to everybody. First of all, there is a difference between what our distinguished colleague Becky said in 22 minutes and what is in the text. Entirely two different things. One. Two, I don't understand what does it mean if IRP is available. What does it mean is available? This is not a legal and textual language. If IRP is invoked and the result of that is successful, we do this. If IRP invoked and the result of that is not successful, is that so? We should use the board invoking IRP and the results favorable or successful and little. Then I am too much puzzled about the last statement that the committee says, just I want to recall the board because I don't like it. This is that what we do in ICANN, that the committee says, I don't like it. Do you think that the government getting together in Marrakesh with a high-level meeting accept such an irrational and such unilateral statement by somebody, I don't like it, and you want to reduce the threshold for the cases that somebody just say that, I don't like what you do, then I want to take you out, I want to recall you? This is not correct. We do not agree, Thomas, with that. if you push us to agree with that, we could not convince our government saying that the board has been recalled because somebody says, I don't like you. There should be a ground, and the only ground, they acting in violation of the bylaw and the article of incorporation, nothing else. There should not be any arbitrary wishing that I don't like this. Please kindly, we in no case agree with this text. Thank you.
Cavus, thank you for that. Let me just clarify that at this point, I'm asking for clarifying questions so that everyone understands what we currently have in our report. I would like to ask you to lower your hand if you want to comment on potential ways forward, because before we have that discussion, we would like Steve to present the two options in front of us so that everyone is clear. And Cavus, just to maybe help clarifying a misunderstanding, it has always been part of our recommendations to give the empowered community the right to have a non-confidence vote to dismiss the board. So there is no particular reason needed for the board recall process. I see that Milton and Roloff's hands are raised. I think Milton was first. I can't see that on my device. So Milton, let's hear you.
Well, I actually think Roloff was first. At least he is on the participants list. So if he wants to go first, I'll let him.
Milton, just go ahead, and we go to Roloff then.
Okay. So this is definitely a point of clarification. So my understanding does deviate a bit from what Becky said in answer to Mike's question. So I thought the point of this change threshold was that the issue was about following or implementing GAC advice, that we didn't want the GAC to be part of the empowered community in that specific case, in that case only. Now, my thought was that in cases here that are numbered 1 and 2, then the threshold would go down to 3, but that if we had brought an IRP and did not prevail, we would have to bring the IRP on other grounds, i.e. nothing to do with the GAC. It would just be a general sense of anger, let's say, at the board. And in that case, the threshold would go back up to 4. And would someone tell me whether that's wrong? And if it is wrong, maybe that might represent some kind of a compromise.
Becky, would you like to answer that?
First of all, let me just say, I do not have a problem with that approach at all, Milton. All I want to say is that what this language attempts to do is to fully empower the recall power and respect the non-unanimity principle. You can only bring an IRP. The only thing an IRP can be based on is a violation of the bylaws. So an IRP is never available if the reason that the community is challenging action is that the bylaws have been violated. So if the community brings an IRP and loses, which is to say the IRP finds that there is no board, no bylaws violation, I'm not sure how you would bring another IRP. And then in that case, if we want to respect the non-unanimity principle, and the community still feels strongly enough that it wants to recall the board, then you need to lower the threshold. If, on the other hand, you want to say well, if the community tries on the basis of an IRP challenge and loses, then you need to go for. I don't have a problem with that at all. It's just adjusting the non-unanimity provision.
Thanks, Becky. Roloff?
Thank you, Thomas. Rosemary, for the record. I think it's a question and not starting the discussion, Thomas. I'll do my best. It's just that I don't understand it. And as long as I don't understand it, I don't think I can actually run a good discussion. Let's take it. Clause 2 and then the next paragraph that starts with if the empowered community has brought such an IRP and does not prevail can be the same thing. Because in both cases, it will be clear that we are not talking about GEC advice that will be inconsistent with the ICANN bylaws. But in clause 2, somehow this is concluded before an IRP has even started, and in the subsequent part, this is only concluded after an IRP is run. And I don't understand two things way differently. I understand the first sentence, that if there's an IRP and the advice is in violation of the ICANN bylaws or inconsistent with the ICANN bylaws, that we lower the threshold. But what I do not understand is in a less serious situation where there's no violation of ICANN bylaws or where a violation of ICANN bylaws is not proved by an IRP, there's this one of the two situations where we still lower the threshold. So, Becky, can you explain to me what the clear and distinct difference between Clause 2 and the subsequent part is? And why do you think they should weigh differently?
So, I think that...
Becky.
I think that you have hit on something here. It is something that that Jordan has noted, that we've got a clash of principles going on here that can be addressed in a couple of different ways. But the point is that if an IRP is not available, that is to say, if the grounds are not are other than the board has violated the bylaws, then yes, the threshold goes down. If the grounds are, almost certainly will be, that the board has violated the bylaws, then you first must bring an IRP. It introduces an extra step.
Yeah, still, but if you say, if the IRP is not available because there is no violation of ICANN bylaws, it is the same situation where an IRP was run, but it does not prevail, because that means that the conclusion of the IRP is that there was no violation of the ICANN bylaws. The only difference is that in the first situation you know this hand somehow, and in the second situation, you only find out after the IRP does not prevail. But in the end, in both situations, the conclusion is there's no violation of ICANN bylaws.
I think that's correct, Roloff. I mean, but just to be clear, the community has to state a reason for recalling the board. Now, that reason can be, we are just so sick and tired and fed up with all of those things that are going on that we are recalling you. But query whether that threshold is ever going to be reached because of one implementation of GAC advice. Frankly, query whether that threshold is ever going to be reached at all.
Thanks very much. Becky? Rola? You had another follow-up question?
Yeah, it just seems to me that, is there not the risk now that this can be played? Because if you're not sure, if a few SOs are not sure that the GEC advice will violate ICANN bylaws, they better from the beginning state that they think it does not. So not use that ground, but use grounds that make the IRP unavailable, because then the threshold will be lower. And they don't risk that the IRP doesn't prevail. So it would be silly to use the argument that this advice is in violation with ICANN bylaws, because you risk them losing the IRP and not being able to send off the board. So you better say something else, then you get the lower threshold because the IRP is not available and the chances of sending off the board are bigger.
Thanks, Roloff. I think we should not make this a discussion between you and Becky. Becky has confirmed in the chat that there is the risk of such game playing. I would really like to limit this discussion to asking clarifying questions at this stage. We will go to the options and ways forward momentarily. I think next in line was Cavus, who has actually raised two hands at the moment. Yet you're only getting one speaking slot, Cavus. Here you go.
Sorry, I was disconnected, so I reconnect. Perhaps that is because of that. I don't raise the two hands. Look, the wording is not clear and the sequence is not clear. In my view, if the community believes that ICANN acted in violation of the bylaw or violation of article of incorporation, IRP can be invoked and we could have three SOAC in favor and one objection. That is correct. Second, if IRP cannot be invoked, I don't like available, cannot be invoked, i.e., ICANN acted in accordance with the bylaw and article incorporation, but still the community wants to recall the board because of lack of confidence that you mentioned, in that case, we need four SO and AC in favor. The language should be clear, and the sequence should be clear, and the scope of application should be clear. I agree with you that at any time, community may want to recall the board on the non-confidence. We should mention non-confidence ground, but not I don't like you. This is not a good term. On the non-confidence ground, then in that case, IRP cannot be invoked because it is mentioned community cannot raise the issue that ICANN acted in violation. But they want to remove the board. In that case, you have to have the full for SO and AC. This is something that the language needs to be corrected, the sequence needs to be corrected, and the scope of application by cross-reference violation of the bylaw and article incorporations. And then if this has been done, still community wants to recall the board on ground of non-confidence, we put it clearly mentioned non-confidence, in that case they could recall and they need to have four SO or AC in favor. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Cavus. I think Olga was first and then Jordan. And if I got this wrong, I do apologize because, again, my application doesn't show the hands raised in the order that they were actually raised.
Hello, can you hear me?
Olga, yes, we can hear you.
It's Jordan first in the screen. So if Jordan wants to go first, that's okay for me.
Just keep the microphone and we'll go to Jordan then.
Fantastic. In general, my comment, I have the same doubts that Roloff expressed 1 second ago, so I won't repeat that. And I think that the test, as it is, at least for me, it's confusing. And it should be clear, especially for us in the GAC, that we have to go back to the GAC and to our governments to explain this to our administrations and to give explanations and perhaps support or not support to this. But I have the same concerns that Roloff expressed, especially when there is no violation of the bylaws. What may happen, and what happens with the threshold and the carve out? So I will stop here. It is honestly, I've been following the list all the weekend, and it's difficult for me to think about the scenarios and how can I explain this to my administration. So I would suggest that a clearer way to explain to those of us that are in the call, in the group, and outside the group could be very much useful. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Olga. Jordan?
Thanks, Thomas. It's Jordan Pardo here at .nz, and just a couple of comments. The first is that it's important to remember where this paragraph is in Recommendation 2. It's Recommendation 2, the Annex 2, sets out the process for enforcement of these community powers. Then it goes into an enforcement section, and then it goes into the table of support or minimal opposition objection required to exercise any of the community powers. And then after it sets all of those out, it has another paragraph that says we're contemplating 5 decisional participants, and then it goes into this paragraph 72. So the first thing I think we need to be really clear about is you could read that as saying that this lowers the threshold from 4 till 3 for all of the powers that are listed as having 4, where it relates to the SCAC advice carve-out. So that would be the budget and strategic plan powers, the IANA functions separation power, and the board recall power. And then the second point is that with the bullet points of section 72, paragraph 72, it's really clear to me that there are only 2 situations where the threshold would be 3, according to this report. That's where an IRP is found that an implementing GAC advice board acts inconsistently in the bylaws. So when an independent group has looked at it and said, board, you broke the rules, then there's this lower threshold on board recall of 3. The other one is if the IRP is not available to challenge the board action in question. We're all having trouble thinking of scenarios. Again, it would be 3. Otherwise, it would be 4, and that's as it should be, because if there's a general dissatisfaction with the board, if the community has lost confidence in the board, the GAC will be a decisional participant, and the threshold should be 4 out of the 5 decisional participants. So the things I think we need to be really clear about are whether the first part of the paragraph applies to all three powers that are threshold before. I think the way it's written, it does. And the second point is the only difference. Everyone seems to be okay with the idea that if the RFP finds against the board, you lower the threshold. Everyone seems to be the difference is on this thing if the RFP is not available. Because there, I think everyone thinks if the RFP finds in favor of the board, then the threshold should go back up to 4. The clause makes it there. Now, I just want to say again on the voice of the transcript, this is such a vanishingly small possibility that no one should die in a ditch over it. You know, we should go with whatever route out of this gets us out of this most quickly and gets the report published. I was sitting here with an apricot technology summit for the whole Asia-Pac region, and the feedback I'm getting is, why have you guys not finished? Get on with it. We don't have another 2 weeks to muck around with this. So that's why my vague preference is just ship the report as it is. I don't believe anyone will die in a ditch over it. Otherwise, we get rid of number 2 because we can't think of when it would be used. Anyway, sorry, I've gone well beyond clarifying questions.
Thanks so much, Jordan. I suggest that we give Becky the opportunity to briefly respond to Shireen Shalabi's question in the chat, and then let's move to the hopefully constructive part after we've now all understood where we are and after we've all identified that there is need for further clarification, because it took us almost an hour to sort out the clarifying question. Let's move to that part momentarily. Becky, can you respond to Shireen's question, which is, what is the incentive of using the IRP route when it is much easier to say, I don't like what the board did, and just recall the board with a threshold of 3?
Well, I mean, I don't think that
I think that that the notion that recalling the board is easy under any circumstances is just it's not. I mean, I just don't think that you will get three SOs or AC combination to agree realistically that we're going to recall the board and disrupt the organization because we don't like them, unless there is a broad loss of confidence, in which case we would not be talking about implementation of GAC advice, and the carve-out wouldn't apply in the first place. But again, you know, I think Jordan's right. I mean, we are talking about how many angels are dancing on the head, and questions about, you know, whether this power is easy to use strike me as, you know, I don't think it's easy to use. I don't think it will ever be easy to use. The thresholds, because of the diversity of the community, recalling the board over a single incident is, in any case, highly unlikely.
Thanks very much, Becky. And as I had indicated earlier, we will now hear Steve DeBianco to outline two ways forward for us so that everyone is clear. Those that want to speak on substance can surely comment once we will open the queue for comments then. But I think we are now conflating the clarifying questions with ways out. And in order to have that discussion, we think it's better to understand first what our options are. Let me preface this by saying that we do have a consensus proposal. So let's not misunderstand this discussion as entirely reopening the issue or even going back further than only to this very question. So should we not be able to reach a consensus on an alternative route to what we have in our report, we will have to stick to what we have in our report. So Steve, could you please present the potential ways forward to us and the consequences thereof?
Sure, John. This is Steve DeBianco, and the co-chairs asked me to try to frame two potential paths forward. We'll call them the easy way and the hard way. I'd first suggest that since Dublin, our community's power to spill this board has been based on four ACs and SOs in support and no more than one objective. And that was anticipating, as we did in Dublin, of having up to five AC and SOs participate. Please understand, everyone, that that has not changed. We are still, as a community, able to exercise a vote of no confidence for any reason we want. It can be based on a pattern or practice over time regarding how the board has interpreted the bylaws, top-down mandates or dictates from the board, or maybe even implementation of GAC advice that was opposed by the community. We can still bring that vote of no confidence. What we have in front of you on two in red is, well, it's a corner case. It's a corner case that Becky added to help capture a situation where we are challenging the board's implementation of GAC consensus advice, and we are challenging it with an IRP. And when we do challenge it with an IRP, it lays out the potential cases, the places you can go, depending on whether that IRP is successful, or is the IRP denied because it's unavailable for the question that we have. It's a hypothetical corner case, and by that I mean it's a place in the room that we don't often go. We work and play in the middle of the room. We might look at what's on the walls, but we don't often go to the corners. So what we mean by a corner case is a potential, but not very practical, and not even an identifiable situation that we may have to go to. Now, I understand that the board's concern about what is up there on the screen, number two in red, isn't really about the GAC or stress test 18. It's really about allowing us, the community, to fill the board with just three instead of four ACs and SOs. Bruce Tonkin mentioned it on our 16th February call, and then Steve Crocker put it in his 19th of February email. So I join many people on this call and over the weekend who are disappointed that the board has singled out such a small corner case as rationale to threaten a firm objection to our entire proposal. I'm disappointed in that. And I'm disappointed if we, the CCWG, if we make this small corner case something we want to die in a ditch over. And the arguments I watched over this weekend were about the principle of the board stepping up and saying they would oppose it for just these 13 words. And I didn't see as much about whether the community's worried about losing the power of our ability to spill the board, because we still have that. So I would propose to you an easy way and a hard way. The easy way to get through this is to stay out of the corner case and remove 2 in red from Annex 2, because in reality we can still take a vote of no confidence and work that through the regular procedure of having 4 ACs and SOs in support. And even if it were about a pattern of dealing with the GAC would not be able to veto. Remember, the power would be designed is that the GAC could not veto our effort to spill the board over a pattern or practice of how they've acted. They can't do that. It takes more than one to object. This is the same way it's been since before we even invented the carve-out for the particular corner cases of challenging the board's implementation of GAC consensus advice, an IRP, or a bylaws rejection. So on that easy way, it's hard to tell from reading emails over the weekend, but the board seems to have indicated they are ready to approve our proposal with no further issues from the board and forward it to NTIA. If corner case 2, the red letters on the screen were dropped. I think Steve Crocker and Shireen are on the phone right now. Let me ask them to confirm in the chat, in writing, that the board would approve the proposal with no further issues, and that would be helpful. While they're working on that, I'll quickly wrap up and tell you what I think the hard way would be. And to do that, I would ask staff to put up a piece of our charter. The hard way for us is to leave item 2, the red text in our proposal, and, well, let's test the board's resolve and see whether they will, as they suggested over the weekend, would they reject our proposal over this corner case? Because if they did, our charter lays out a rather, well, a complicated process under which we in the CCWG and all the chartering orgs we represent will enter consultations with the board. There's a 30-day window on item 4. There's a back and forth and a dialogue with rationale that we go through. I hope you have scroll control, because you'll need to scroll longer to see the bottom of this process and where it gets us. It takes us into further negotiations with the board. It doesn't automatically override the board's rejection if, in fact, the board did so. So there's more work to do with the hard way. It's not a simple way forward, as Jordan sort of represented earlier on the call. It might be a simple way to get off this phone call tonight, but it's not a simple way to finish our proposal. So these 3 open questions there, well, under the hard way, right? Would the board reject the 2/3? Could we, as the CCWG, persevere and override that? Would delay that's introduced, and it's several weeks of delay, would that push beyond the 30th of September in terms of the transition? Okay, none of us know the answer to those questions. Let's not even try to answer them. The only question we can answer on this call tonight is whether we think the corner case on those 13 words in red is really worth the risks and costs of extending this process further. That's the question before us, easy way or the hard way. And, Grace, if you put the text for paragraph 72 back up, that'll help to focus the discussion. And back to you, Thomas.
Thanks very much, Steve. So, again, we have 2 options that we deem to be viable at this stage. One is to leave the report as it is at the risk of having the board reject our proposal and forcing us into this consultation phase, or delete what's been highlighted in red in the remote participation room in front of you. So let's hear some views on that. I think from Cavus that's an old hand, so let's move to Milton, Bruce, and then we hear Ed Morris and Mike Chartier.
Yes. So thank you, Steve, for trying to make this easier. However, I don't think you succeeded. I think the mere fact that this, I think it's a mischaracterization to say that number two is a corner case. It'll never happen. And let me explain why you would use the IRP instead of number two. And I think in most cases, any challenge of GAC advice would probably go for number one over number two. Because with number two, your only option is to spill the board. And with number one, what you're really interested in, if you're upset about the way the board is following GAC advice, what you're interested in is having them not implement that advice. So most of us would be interested in getting a precedent set that says, no, when the GAC tells the board to do this, that is outside the scope of its mission or it violates the bylaws. Very few people would have a rational interest in spilling the board over a specific action. You don't get any guarantees of better behavior going forward. It's only if there is a general pattern of the board doing things with the GAC that looks like the entire board needs to replace that you would not use the IRP. And as I think as Becky and others have said, I don't see how people would do that lightly. So it's not that it's a corner case. In other words, it's not some freaky or unusual thing. It seems to me to be a very important potential check or balance to have in the hands of the empowered community, but it would rarely be used, and we hope it would never need to be used, but I don't see why you wouldn't want to have the ability to do that.
Thanks very much, Milton. Bruce? Bruce, it's your turn.
To be muted.
Bruce Tonkin, we can't hear you.
You can't hear me?
Ah, now we can hear you. Go ahead.
All right. Thank you. Not sure my line must have been muted. Firstly, the board would support that proposal that Steve Dempy and co. has put forward, which is removing the red text, and that was consistent with the proposal we made when we last spoke on the call last week. Just a couple of sort of comments, I guess, on what Milton is saying. I think certainly we don't want to create an incentive not to use IRP. And so if you have a situation where you're saying normally it requires a minimum of four supporting organisations and advisory committees to spill the whole board, that's our principle and our default position. And then we're saying, well, in the special situation of GAC advice, we would allow three, firstly, if it's against the bylaws or the mission, then we should use IRP. If we can't use the IRP, we should just spill the board anyway with three SOs and ACs. Our view is that the focus should be on using IRP for that individual case. If it's, as Milton says, a broader pattern of behaviour, that power is still there. The power to remove the board with four SOs and ACs still remains in all of these cases, and then it's just a case of whether the GAC is prohibited from contributing to that. That's obviously a decision that the CCWG has made. But at the end of the day, removing the board should have broad support. And if it's four, if it's the GNSO, the CCNSO, the ASO, and ALAC, which would be the four in this scenario, they would look at the broad pattern of behaviour of the board. And if they figure that the board is following GAC advice too frequently or whatever the broader concern is, then the process is still available to them. It just has a threshold of four. So I think the threshold of three should apply when an IRP finds that we have not complied with the bylaws on an individual case, and the threshold of four applies to all other cases. I think it's simple for the community to understand.
Thanks very much, Bruce. Next is Alan.
Thank you very much. I certainly support dropping number two. Steve gave one rationale. Roloff gave another that I think is even more powerful, that number one says you need four if the bylaws have not been violated. Clearly, if the IRP is not available, the bylaws have not been violated, and therefore you should similarly require four. I think Shireen's question is important, the one that was answered of why would we go to an IRP if we have another path? We've always said from the very beginning we don't really expect the removal of the board to ever be exercised. It's the threat that you're going to try to and the disruption associated with it that is the real danger. And if you're trying to force the board to do something, that threat may well be effective even if it's never exercised. So I think we can't say it's a corner case of a corner case, because we have vested interests in this organization who have strong will to do certain things, and I think we must make sure that the overall community has a say and that it doesn't devolve to a very small number of people. And lastly, we always have the option of removing board members one by one. It's a painful, slower process, but one could affect the same net result if the community as a whole really had that desire. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Alan. I would like to close the queue after Jordan so that everyone gets an opportunity to speak. Let's hear Mike now.
Thank you. And I'm of the camp that it's a corner case, can live with what Steve said. But whatever we do, we have to fix the language. Half of our problem has been that the language is incorrect. It says in the first paragraph it will be three with the following exception, which means you're going to tell them when the threshold is four, and it doesn't say that. And taking out the red language doesn't fix it either, because it just leaves you again in the second paragraph with two cases where the reduced threshold still applies. So whatever we do, we have to fix the language. And if we could just say, in this situation it's three, and in this situation it's four, it would be much better and eliminate more than half of the discussion that we've been having. Thanks.
Thanks very much, Mike. And surely the language needs to be tidied. Ed?
Yeah, hi. Thanks, Thomas. In terms of substance, I will just point out, or at least opine, that if you remove two, don't expect GNSO approval and support of a few of the recommendations. I can't speak for others, but I can count. There'll be some problems that way. More importantly, Steve, you're right. There's an easy way out. There's always an easy way out. There are going to be easy ways out of the accountability rules we set for the future. To me, the most important thing here is following our timetable, following our plan, and showing the world that we as a community can control the excesses of the board. Guys, we were in a review phase. 7 hours before the 48-hour review was to expire, Steve came down with his post. This wasn't the time for it. The time was earlier during the comment and review phase. The time was later during the GPI phase. This wasn't the time. In the GNSO, we've been struggling to figure out how to schedule our consideration of the CCWG. We have a few other things on the plate. The next round review of the RPMs, et cetera. It's hard to fit this in our schedule. We finally did it. And then, bingo, the board has spoken. Oh, my God. It was bad timing. It was disruptive. But more importantly, is the message we're sending to the greater world about what this community is about. I put it in the post. I've spoken to some congressional folks. They're going to be listening to this call. And what they're asking is not 4-3-5. It's whether this community will hold the board to the procedures, timetables, and rules that we set for them. We're asking the world to trust us to do so in the future so that ICON has independence. If we don't do it now, how can the global community trust us to do it in the future? I say go the hard way, because it's the right way. Thanks.
Thanks very much, Ed. Next in line is Shireen.
Can you hear me, Thomas?
Yes, we can hear you.
Okay, so I wanted to respond to Steve Del Bianco's question very clearly, but I'd like to say, just remind a chat that Bruce has put into the room, saying that the board has actually did follow the process. So I want to go back to Steve Del Bianco's question, where here's where the board is. I think if we're able to resolve this issue, and the suggestion of removing that second line is red is a solution the community is willing to go forward with, then I think the board would have no more concerns regarding the proposal. We have a board information call tonight where we're going to go through all of the recommendations, and As I can tell you that we are pretty much there, and the only issue left is this one. So if this issue is resolved, I think we can all together move forward, and it would be pity to throw all of the effort we've done collectively. I think we're very close there, and let's move forward and get this done. Thank you.
Thanks very much. Next is Roloff.
Thank you, Thomas. Roloff Meyer. I don't agree with the suggestion that this is just a corner case. I think it's an error. In my clarifying questions, I try to make that conclusion clear to myself, and I'm convinced now that it's inconsistent with what we are actually trying to achieve here. And I think if the basis is a corner case, the problem now is that the risk of this clause, this part two, being used or misused is much larger than the possibility that we end up in this corner case situation that it tries to address. So I'm always very much in favor of easy solutions. I'm not very much in favor of easy way out. But I think the easy solution in this case is just dropping clause two, and then we will still have what we intended in the remaining text, especially if we have fixed it along with Mike's suggestion. Thank you.
Thanks very much. Greg is next.
Thank you. Greg Shatton, for the record. I think it's important to stand on principle, as listening to Ed, but I think that most important principle in the that I want to stick with is the principle that this is a consensus-driven organization. And part of being a consensus-driven organization is moving from your position at the barricade to a position in the center and accepting something that's not quite like what you wanted, but that's essentially like what you wanted. And I think it's not just the board that is close to accepting but having trouble with the language in front of us with the red language in there. I can see value in both directions. I don't necessarily think either one is terrible. I don't think either one is necessarily all that easy. I think this is a corner case in the sense that it's so unlikely that we will get here, and there are so many ways to avoid getting here and still accomplishing objectives that we may want to accomplish. So I would encourage us to think of the principle of consensus and the principle of finding area of commonality. I think it would not just bring some closure to this whole process. I think it would bring a number of different stakeholders into the process. I am not one to die on the barricades for this one, I liked it. With the red language in, I can live with it. With the red language out, given that we have 12 recommendations, which really span dozens of sub-recommendations, we have huge accomplishments here. We have lots of ways to enforce them, including picking off board members other than those we think will stick with us. So I'm of a mind that we take the language out, we move on, we find ourselves in consensus. Some of us feeling a little happier than others about the consensus, but probably also feeling a little less happy about other parts. So in the grand scheme of things, if anyone were to walk in from the outside and look at us arguing in the middle of the night, for many of us, about this particular point, they'd think we're insane. So I can also plea for another principle on top of consensus, which is sanity. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Greg. Next in next in line is Steve, please.
You're referring to me, Crocker?
Yes, please.
Hi, thank you. So I apologize. I had lost control of my screen and couldn't chat properly at the right time. A bit ago, Steve Del Bianco asked for expression from the board as to whether we would be whether we'd be in agreement if that those words were dropped and that we'd raise no further objections. And the answer is yes. I can make a longer speech, but I think it's important to be simple and clear. We've put an awful lot of work into this, of course, as we know everybody else has. We're not casual about this, but we do appreciate the need to reach closure, and we're prepared to do that now.
Okay. Thank you very much, Steve. Next is Paul.
Hi. Good morning, all. So I've been listening very closely, and I've heard the board articulate only one justification for its objection, which has been repeated in the chat a couple of times, which is the lack of representativeness if only 3 out of 4 voting members voted to still the board. That strikes me as a make-weight argument. If the 3 SOs or 2 SOs and ALAC were to vote to spill the board after due consideration and after all the process that Greg so rightly said would probably prevent us from ever getting there, that would hardly be an unrepresentative action. So it strikes me very clearly that the only reason that the board really objects this is make the ability to spill the board completely more difficult and reduce that possibility. I get why they want that. I get that they fear comes with that threat. And I get that it should be a rare circumstance when we reach that point. But that misconceiture of the power, power is not of value if we exercise it. Power is of value because the threat to exercise it controls activity well before the threat ever needs to materialize. By granting the board's request for a training chair, which is an easy case, but another phrase for easy case is caving in, by granting that request now, immunity in the long run permanently, decisively, reduces its control over the board in ways that we cannot predict the outcome of. It is the wrong decision. It is one I will object to in as many fora as I possibly can, as loudly as I can, for precisely that reason. I would say that we had consensus well before this, that the only reason, that if the reason we take the easy course now is because it's the easier course and that's the way to get there and reach the end, that's the wrong answer. Wrong answer for the community, wrong answer for ICANN, wrong answer for the transition.
Thanks very much, Paul. Next is Malcolm.
Thank you, Thomas. The first case here, the idea that you go to the IRP first before spilling the board, seems to me this is the corner case. This is an idea that no one has ever really suggested before the board came up with it just very recently, the idea that the community might wish to spill the board after having successfully achieved a remedy in the IRP. Why would the community ever want to do that? That seems to be nonsense. If the community goes to the IRP and gets satisfaction, it has had its remedy. There's no need to spill the board then. The time when the community would need to spill the board is only in the case of number two, where an IRP remedy is not available. And people have been struggling to understand when that might happen, and of course it's, you know, a very extreme idea that we would ever want to spill the board. But certainly in this context, if the board were to be essentially further empowering the GAC, then that might be a possible reason why GAC advice would have advised the board to do something that the community was very upset with. So, for example, the example I gave on the list was if the board said that it would only process new GTLD applications if there was no early warning objection from the government. And if there was an early warning objection from the government, that would have to be lifted before it would continue processing. That would effectively award each individual government with a veto over any new applications. Now, the community could not challenge that under the IRP, but would be able to say, hold on, this is completely undermining the community-driven policy-making process. And that would give, they would then have an ability to challenge that, to challenge the board by saying, no, the board is not acting properly as a board in this case, and we wish to discharge it. The question is, if the community wishes to consider something like that, should the GAC, as well as giving the GAC advice, also take part as a decisional participant in the decision as to whether to spill the board for implementing that GAC advice? Now, we have previously said, no, that the GAC should choose between either having its special relationship with the board in the provision of GAC advice, or choose to be part of the decisional process on spilling the board, but it can't do both. It can't have take part as both the party that is recommending the decision to be made and the party that is deciding whether that should be overridden. That is what we previously said. If we take out two, we are simply reversing that position. All this is, this discussion we are having now, is reopening the question of whether we should prevent the GAC from having two bites at the cherry. Removing the text in red is effectively reversing that decision. I think that would be unwise, and I think that this has been made incredibly complicated, completely unnecessarily, just by those that wish to reverse that decision. I think the simplest thing to do to simplify this report would be to drop the whole of the text, not drop two, but drop the entire second half of this page, everything after the first paragraph on this page, because the first case that has been dreamt up by the board is essentially fanciful. But if that's not to be the case, I think we should go ahead with the entire text that we've got, that Becky has crafted for us, so that we continue to preserve the GAC carve-out position that we'd agreed upon. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Malcolm. Jordan?
Thanks, Thomas. Look, this is quite an intimidating spot in this queue to be speaking. I just wanted to make a couple of points. One is that someone has to be the grown-up here, and we have to get this project over the line. We're talking about removing something that we added a couple of weeks ago. I don't think it's an abuse of our process. I think it's improper. I don't think we should be doing it. But if the way we can get over the line is to remove that part two, we should do it. If that's not going to hold things up for a week or 2 weeks or 7 months or lead to 7 million things being reopened, or we keep it the way it is. So I don't know what anyone else thinks, but I just don't believe the ICANN board is going to sink the transition because of this either way. So I reiterate what I've said a number of times. Don't care which way we go. Don't mind if we're the group who's the bigger and more magnanimous one to step away from this issue and say, have the fight if you want it. This isn't important enough to do it. But either way, we have to resolve it tonight. And that's all I wanted to say.
Thanks very much, Jordan. And I see that there were hands raised after I had closed the queue. So I would like to ask for your understanding that we don't reopen the queue. Cavus had made a proposal in the chat, which I think everyone has read. So I would like to point your attention to that in response to Cavus's request. I think we now need to assess whether the proposal to remove the language in red gets traction inside this group. So I would like to ask, as we usually do, whether there is objection to making this tweak to the language, which we see on the screen in front of us. So I would like to like the participants of this call, members and participants, I should say, to use the red check marks if they object to removing the language in red on the screen. So that is the option that has been presented by Steve as the easy way to remove what's in red. And thereby meet the board's concern and the concern that has been supported by others. We saw that there are some on this call that have supported deleting the language in red. So that is the proposal that we're now discussing. So please use the red check mark if you think that deleting red is not acceptable. Can I ask staff to take note of the objections? So there are 9 objections. Bernie, can you please read out the list of those that have opposed so that this is on record? And we should add Eberhard Lisse to that list because he mentioned in the chat that he would be against making such change.
Yes, so Brett Schaefer, Edward Morris, Osnab Badi, James Gannon, Malcolm Hutty, Elton Mueller, Paul Rosenzweig, Robin Gross, Stephen Deerheek, Tatiana Kopina, and that is it.
Thanks very much. So, Cavus, this is sort of difficult. You keep raising your hand. So we've already moved forward, but if you keep it very, very brief, please do speak.
Yeah. Sorry, when you delete two, you have to delete either in the second line, because there's only one case, and also you have to delete parenthetical one, because there's only one case, can only be applied after so on and so forth, when you're deleting two. Just editorial, purely editorial. Thank you.
Thanks, Cavus. But we have significant number of objections. So I think that this editorial change does not alter the view of those that have expressed their objection. So let me just briefly pause here. There will be a few seconds of silence, so just bear with me.
Thomas? He's been twiddling our thumbs and, you know, listening to chatter about music options.
So, this is Thomas. Let us reconvene. We would like to treat the two proposals that were on the table equally, so we will now proceed to ask for objections to shipping the report on an as-is basis. So, can we use the? Please do clear your status in the Adobe, and let us now ask for objections to shipping the report as it is.
Cheryl here, just to be clear, seeing as I have a red X up and I want to make sure it's up for the right reason. Thomas, you are saying leaving paragraph 2 in.
That is correct.
So, fine, my objection to that is duly and appropriately noted.
So can I ask?
Hang on. Thomas, this is Rudolph. I missed that bit. Can you repeat it, please?
Yes. We are now doing the same exercise for the second option we discussed earlier. So I'm now asking for objections to shipping the report as it is, i.e. the February 19th version.
Including those two.
Correct.
Roloff, yep.
Hi, I fell off Adobe. Will it be possible after the checks are up for someone to speak to what is seen? Thanks.
Thanks, Avery.
Thomas, we have people who are on the phone and not on Adobe. It would be fair to allow them to participate also, since this is not a formal members vote.
Yes, we would like to include those. I think, Bernie, we need your assistance in collecting the names. We also need to take a look at who actually objected. Particularly, we need to take a look at the others that are on the audio. So. Who is on the audio only and who would like to object, please do speak now.
Thomas, just for the record, sorry, it's James. Seems to be a couple of people who their tick marks have not been checked from the previous, have not been changed from the previous poll. So just for accuracy, I think that there might be a bit of a procedural thing here that people may not have cleared their check marks from the previous poll.
So, staff, can you do a quick check of whether we had check marks up from the previous poll?
Thomas, Cheryl here. While staff is doing that, there are questions in the chat, and I think it needs to be clearly articulated that this is a poll. And any attendee to this meeting, be you member or participant in this poll, can exercise your opinion. This is not a members-only vote. So in the answer to those people who weren't sure whether they should be in exercising their opinion, feel free to.
Thanks for that clarification, Chair. Nonetheless, we will surely analyze where the objections came from.
Of course.
So I get confirmation from staff that no votes stayed up from the previous part. Let me ask who on the phone bridge would like to object to, so that we can add them to the list.
This is Fabi Thomas. Are you taking votes from members, non-members, anyone on the call?
We're collecting the views from everyone on the call, but we will analyze afterwards where the objections originate from.
Very good. Okay, thank you. So I'm only and I object as well.
Yeah, Thomas, this is Tarek Kamel. If I may also, if it's allowed, that I'm on the bridge voice only, and I object if it counts for you. Thank you.
Thank you. And we will certainly also analyze whether staff or representatives of chartering organizations have expressed their view. But let's just capture what we have. Okay, there has been the request to do the counter test and do the exercise again for expressions of support. So we do it in the same order as we did for these polls. So I would now like to ask for expressions of support for removing the language in red. So please clear your status. Please all clear your status. And please indicate now if you support to remove the language in red.
Yes, again, Tarek, I support to remove the language in red. Thank you, Thomas.
Thank you.
Can staff take note of support.
Aubrey supports removing the language in red.
Tavus has supported in chat, just to make sure we've captured that.
Please put name. Thank you.
Thanks, Cavus. So if all of you that wanted to express their support for removing the language in red have done so, please clear your status now. And I'm now asking for support for shipping the report as it is in the version of February 19th.
Hi, Thomas. This is James. I'm on the phone bridge only. I support that, please.
So let us add James to the list of supporters for shipping the report. Anyone on the
on the audio bridge that is in support of shipping the report on an as-is basis.
Thomas,
looks like Shireen has changed sides.
Yes, I'm confused. Alan, I was going to bring up exactly that. Shireen has still got a green tick up for something he spoke that he and the rest of the board agreed with the former vote. So I'm not sure that he is able to clear his status, or maybe he has changed opinion.
Well, I guess he's not following party discipline, Hank, CLO.
Listen, I couldn't...
It's interesting to see this work.
Milton, can you repeat that for me, please?
I was actually just making a rather sarcastic comment about the tendency of certain people to grab the mic without being recognized in order to enforce party discipline upon certain members.
Thank you. Milton?
Do recall we're dealing with Adobe Connect where people drop off and die regularly.
Alan, I'm happy to recognize you, and I hope you recognize me. And yes, Adobe Connect frequently leaves echoes of things that have you've done before. That's how we end up with two people on, when two indications of people on, etc. But, all right, Milton, you can ignore us.
Okay, so thanks all for that. We have 4 minutes to the top of the hour. We will certainly need to analyze this this result to see where the objections and the support originated from. We will announce the outcome and the way forward, our determination on the list. And with that, I would like to hand it over to Leon Sanchez for closing remarks or any other business.
Thank you very much, Thomas. And well, this has been a very interesting exercise. As Thomas has highlighted, we will be providing the results and the proposal forward on the list. And at this point, I would like to call for any other business. And I see two hands up, Brett Schaffer and Cavus. So, Brett.
Thank you. Leon, can you hear me?
Yes, we do hear you.
Okay, thank you. I mentioned this in the chat, but I want to make sure that it's highlighted here. I think it's important to clarify from the board that whatever decision is made here today, that this matter is not considered presidential in terms of what may happen if the GAC never decides to become a decisional participant and the thresholds need to be adjusted to reflect the fact that we only have 4 SOs and ACs. And at that point, I think it's important that the community not violate that principle of unanimity and allow for those thresholds to be lowered to 3 SOAC approval for exercise of all community powers against the board. And so I would request that you make a formal inquiry to the board as to their position on this matter so that this particular case doesn't come back to haunt us for a matter that may arise later on down the road. And that option remains open. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Brett. And I'm not sure if someone from the board would like to address Brett's request, maybe Bruce or someone else from the board. Anyone from the board that would like to answer to Brett's request? Or should we take this offline and just state for the record that Brett has made this request and we would be pending some kind of a reply from the board? So next on the queue is
and, if I could just add one small comment, because I think that the answer from the board may actually have an impact on people's positions here, because if this is presidential and if it will impact that decision later down the road, then it may cause people to reconsider their positions on this matter. Thank you.
Thanks, Pat. So next in the queue is Cavus, and I'm sorry for interrupting.
Thank you, Leon. I don't think that the question has any legal validity. We are talking of GAC decisions. We cannot prejudge. We cannot preempt. We cannot do anything about that. The question is legally not valid. And I don't think that that should be. We should leave it to the GAC to decide. We are not talking of exercising the power. We are talking of giving the right to exercise the power. Whether GAC use that exercise power, that is to be left to the GAC. My question to you was that I raised my hand for the deletion of the red lines on number two, and I couldn't make it possible. Could you please, when you're analyzing, I am in favor of deletion of two in red and a small edit. Thank you.
Thank you, Caboose. Your suggestion has been noted, and of course, should the final way forward would be deleting number two, of course, that proper edits should be needed to take place. So next on the queue, I have Andrew Sullivan. Andrew?
Thank you. I just had a sort of procedural question. I heard that the report back from the chairs about the disposition of all of this was going to come on the list, but I didn't hear an estimate of when. And since I know that in Mox in the morning I'm going to have a lot of questions about how things went, it'd be good if I could give people a sort of rough idea of when we will hear back.
Thank you very much, Andrew. And I can tell you that it will be shortly, within the next hour. So I cannot tell an exact time frame, but I can assure you that it will be as soon as possible. Next on the queue is Athena. You're welcome, Andrew. Next is Athena.
Yes, hello. Actually, I'm covered by Andrew's question. And, well, if we cannot come up to this conclusion now, sure, it would be appreciated if we can have it as soon as possible. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Athena, and I note that Thomas has signaled in the chat box that this will be within the next 10 hours, so that should provide us a little bit more clearness as to the time frame. Finally, we have Sebastian Bachelet. Sebastian?
Yes, thank you. Just to be sure, after the report will be shipped, the next action will be for the chartering organization to take a stand on this report. Thank you.
That is right, Sebastian. After we ship this proposal, then the charter organizations should need to express their views on this final report. So I see that Kavus hand is still up. I'm not sure if that's an old hand, Kavus.
No, the old hand, sorry.
Thank you very much, Kavus. Okay, well, having no other business and no more people left on the queue, I would like to thank you, everyone, for attending this call. Thank you for the very fruitful discussion. And we'll talk to you soon. And this call is now adjourned. Thank you very much.
Thank you, everybody. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.